Hey folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. You've got myself, Brad, and Tyler here as well, both from the Offensive Security team. And today we're going to talk about budgeting for and optimizing penetration testing investments, right? So we kind of want to look at pen testing as an investment in the overall cyber posture, security posture of your organization, and you know, how to kind of make the best of that. Even though it is an expensive proposition. Quick admin, though, as always, if you find this stuff useful, please rate, share, like, and really the biggest thing you can do is tell a friend and spread the word about what we're doing over here. So, all right. So I would say, let's start out with, you know, do you need a pen test, right? Like, first of all, let's just ask the obvious question. Do you even need one to begin with? And how do I know really if I need a pen test? Like, are there prerequisites? Like, what are your thoughts?
I think I'm kind of biased being a penetration tester. I think everybody needs a penetration test. I think regardless of size of organization, everybody is going to have gaps that can't be found internally.
Yeah.
I think it comes from the same vein of, you know, I stare at something all day, I might miss something. And that's kind of how I see internal organizations. They look at their security all day and it might look good to them. But when somebody else comes in and audits your security and tries to break it, a lot of interesting things are found. So I think there's a benefit to everybody getting a penetration test,
yeah,
which makes me think everybody needs one. I guess that's my two cents.
No, I mean, and I agree, right? So like one of the things kind of on, as a side mission here that we frequently find on penetration tests are resources people didn't even know they had, right? Mm-hmm. Like how many times do we bump a server that's just, you know, hadn't been patched since 2003 and the client's like, oh man, I thought we turned that thing off. You know, meanwhile, it's collecting as much malware as it possibly can. And so, yeah, I mean, I do think that there's value for pretty much everybody. I think you should probably always ask the question also, how have I prepared for a pen test, right? Mm-hmm. And so I like to think of a pen test as the final exam. And so in order to be successful at that test, really, you need to study for it. And what I mean by that is you need to have proper internal procedures and processes in place. You need to be doing vulnerability management, right? You need to have solid patch plans in place. You need to have good asset management. And so there are things that if you don't have those, let's address that first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, really the job of a pen test is to validate those things, right? If you have good asset management, if you have good patch management, if you're internal risk assessment capabilities are squared away, the pen test really should be a formality. Right. And what we're really trying to do there is just validate the things that you have, the things that you're doing. So you need one, but you need to make sure your ducks are in a row, because what we don't want to do is come in and it just be an absolute bloodbath. Right. We come in there and we're getting domain admin from the outside, which is rare, but it does happen. And so, you know, that's a good example of maybe not being fully prepared for it. Are you still getting value? Absolutely. You know, even if you're unprepared, we're still going to make sure you get value out of that. So,
I think you make a good point. Specifically, people who don't have proper patch management already in place or don't have good asset management in place. If you don't know what you have out there, you're probably not ready. There's certain prerequisites that you probably need to check the box on first before you get a pen test. Specifically for an external, if you don't know what all you have public facing, you don't know the IP ranges that half your stuff's sitting on, need to start there.
Yeah.
Because your penetration tester is going to find all that stuff, but it's better if the person testing doesn't have to burn a lot of time having to find all your assets. If you have your ducks in a row, they can spend more time trying to break your assets and you get more value there.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. So kind of in that same vein of preparing for it, you really need to, so moving into budgeting a little bit, right? So pen testing is expensive. It's actually not that expensive relative to other cyber costs, right? Like if you're, the cost of a good firewall is probably going to be more than a penetration test, depending on what you're doing. Now, if you're doing comprehensive testing, you're doing web, you're doing internal API, mobile, all that stuff. Yeah, it's going to get up there a little bit. But, you know, planning in advance and budgeting the year prior you know, most organizations work on a fiscal schedule. And so, you know, in 2023, I'm creating my fiscal plan for 2024. And if you don't roll pen testing into that, and then you suddenly decide you need it halfway through the year, it's going to be a squeeze. You're going to have to get that money from somewhere else, or you're going to have to go back to the board or the committee or whoever is responsible for your finances. And part of that planning is knowing what kind of penetration testing you need, right? So, you know, you mentioned everybody should get a penetration test. I agree with that. So what do you think their first pen test should be versus as they mature, the other types of pen testing they might want to do?
Yeah, I think the entry level penetration test that I see almost everybody start out with to kind of get their feet wet to organizations that have never had one is an external penetration test. Yeah. It's not as intensive as I'd say a web app or internal penetration test is, yeah, because you're starting from an outside perspective and you're taking the perspective of somebody that, you know, is outside the organization. So the attacks are a lot different than they are in an internal, and it's more, I don't want to say elementary, but, you know, it's more first step than I'd say an right. internal is.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. And I think a big part of that is understanding where you are from a security maturity perspective. You know, if you've never had a pen test before, your first one probably doesn't need to be an internal, right? Because it's gonna hurt a lot, right? And so, you know, if you have never had one before, you know, it's okay to go ahead and anticipate doing the internal or maybe web, depending on what you do. If your development shop, you know, is the first one that you do, you know, going to be a fully comprehensive across your entire app, you know, web application portfolio? Probably not. You know, we're going to start on some low hanging fruit, figure out where we stand and go from there. So I think a big part of that is evaluating your organization's risk. And so, for example, you know, when we're looking at certain institutions like higher education and hospitals, their threats are just as likely to come from the inside as they are from the outside, just because of the openness by design of their environment. And so, you know, if we evaluate that as a high risk thing, also high impact too, right? Is if I do manage to get a threat actor inside my healthcare environment, you know, is patient care at risk? Are you know, is a HIPAA violation a potential outcome of that? So, you know, I think you have to take that into consideration as well. You know, if I'm a web dev shop, you know, a lot of our clients are, you know, producing large scale web applications that are customer facing. And if that is your job, that might be more important than, you know, an external network penetration test, right? If, yep. if your crown jewels are, you know, this core app that you're selling to all of your clients. And so, you know, I think a big part of that is looking internally at your risk profile and figure out where those threats are likely to have the highest impact. Start there. If you have no idea where to start, probably start with an external pen test, you know, and budget accordingly.
Yeah, because I think part of the benefit of an external pen test is it's going to tell you your next steps. Depending on, you know, how ugly and the external penetration test is, it'll tell you if you need a web app assessment on certain web apps. Because, you know, as part of that engagement, we're going to do light web app testing. And then that's going to be your stepping point to a full blown web app. Mm-hmm. And it'll also tell you, you know, hey, we found avenues to your internal environment. You might want to get that looked at as well. So it's kind of a tell all engagement that kind of gives you your next steps. Helps us.
Yeah. And I would even say, like, I would agree with that and take it even a step further. In some cases, we can tell what your internal posture looks like from the outside. You know, so like when we start seeing, you know, older Exchange on-prem and exposed NTLM over HTTP and stuff like that, you know, my gears start turning and I'm like, man, if your external, you know, posture and health is your hygiene is poor, I'm really wondering now what your internal looks like.
Right. Yep.
All right. So kind of moving along, what about the timing and frequency of testing? Right. So most clients, I think, universally get one external pen test a year. I would say that's true for the majority of our clients. Is that enough? Should it be more? Should it be less? Should I like alternate internal, external? What does that look like for the average client?
I think it depends on what you're trying to do. If your goal is to check a box and satisfy auditing requirements, I think an annual pen test is going to satisfy those requirements for you and is going to meet your needs. I think if your end goal is to have robust security and checks against that security, I think biannual pen testing would be the solution there. Both on internal and external, having a faster cadence is going to make sure that the patches that you're implementing, as well as the fixes that you're implementing, are working, and it's going to be, you know, a direct reflection of that. So I think it's completely goal-based in terms of, you know, cadence.
Yeah. And I think it depends a lot too on how often you make dramatic changes, right? So like in my prior life, I worked in the banking industry, man, we were changing entire swaths of our network over the course of 6 months. In fact, you know, we had an entire engineering team that was on the go constantly making changes to our architecture and, you know, create that one time snapshot of an external penetration test or even an internal for that matter, is going to be expired in value within 4 to 6 months. Mm. So if you're a large shop and you're frequently making architecture changes, yeah, man. Or alternatively, trigger pen tests based on dramatic changes. You know, so we have a lot of clients that come to us and they'll say, hey, we're migrating everything to the cloud. And we want you guys to look at what that posture is once we get there. And so, you know, if they had a pen test in January when they were on-prem and in February they moved everything to the cloud, that pen test doesn't matter anymore. And so I think you can either trigger it on, you know, regular intervals or have it be based on major changes in your environment. But in some cases, annual isn't enough. And so, you know, alternatively, if you're a really slow moving organization and you don't have regulatory requirements, because to your point, if you do have regulatory requirements, it's an annual external no matter what.
Yep.
Right. Pretty much universally across all the regulatory bodies. But if maybe you're a slow changer and you guys don't make a lot of changes to your environment, you could even alternate internal this year, external next year, or some variation of that. But I still think more than a year between pen tests is tough, because even if you don't intentionally make changes to your environment is still changing. Yep. You know, Microsoft, you know, releasing 1 billion patches a year, and, you know, every other vendor in your environment is probably also changing stuff, and they may be introducing new problems throughout that process.
Yeah. To your point, I think waiting more than a year can be a detriment because of how fast the cybersecurity landscape changes, both from an internal perspective and an external perspective. There are new vulnerabilities that come out every day. Granted, there's not new 0 days that drop every day, but there are new vulnerabilities associated with software, common software that we see, you know, organizations use every day. So, you know, just having that check on those and making sure that there's no glaring issues, I think should be a yearly thing. Because I think going longer than that, and, you know, you're running the risk of having something major sitting out there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%, man. So if we kind of combine the previous conversation about budgeting with the timing and frequency of testing, right? So you kind of look internally and establish what that risk profile is for you, create a pen testing schedule around that and budget for it, right? And so generally speaking, pen test costs don't dramatically change year over year. Right. And so we're in some weird economic times right now. So I'm not going to like guarantee you that there's not a price increase or something, but, you know, you're not going to go from $10,000 to $50,000 over a year's time, generally speaking, unless you add to the scope. So, so it should be relatively straightforward to budget accordingly. Right. If I'm going to do an annual internal external, and then every other year I want to do my main web, you know, that cost isn't going to change in a dramatic way.
Right.
And so, you know, it should be pretty straightforward. Now I'm going to skip over the anecdotes section 4 and skip to this and come back to it. So, you know, as part of that budgeting and that evaluation process, how do I know, and we've talked about this on another episode, I think last year, but how do I know that I'm going to get a good pen test, right? Like one of the things you can't ignore when it comes to cost are the budget pen tests out there. You know, if somebody's doing a pen test for $2,000, you're not getting a pen test.
Mm-hmm.
Either not by a qualified person, or, you know, not by a person at all, probably for that cost. And so how do I know what I'm getting? What kind of questions do I ask? Stuff like that.
Well, I think the number one way to see the end product that you're going to get is to look at a sample report. See what the organization that's trying to offer you a pen test, see what their sample report looks like. Look at the findings. The most important thing that you need to know is, can I understand the solutions, recommendations? Is it robust? Is there enough information in here for me to go out and fix these issues? Do I have a clear understanding of what the issues are? And having an end understanding, because if the end product is good, then the steps that they're going to take to get the end product, you can also assume are good. In addition to that, ask the people who are testing you what methodology they're using. Because if they can't tell you, you're not getting a good test.
Right.
Make sure that they're using, you know, a good methodology that's noted by other penetration testers that's seen as good.
And then, look, man, there's not a lot of methodologies out there, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as someone who pen tests, you know, all of us pen test every single day, we know what all the methodologies are, right? And so it shouldn't be a, hold on, let me look up a methodology and tell you, like the person you're talking to should know. And so, you know, we even go so far as to educate our marketing and sales team, like here are the methodologies we use, because it is such an important and common question. If we're not following a methodology, then are we creating a repeatable test? And, you know, the answer to that's obviously no, but you know, we use the PTES methodology, right? That's specifically called out by regulatory bodies and anywhere that a pen test is required. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying everybody has to use that one, but use something that's recognized in the industry. So you mentioned looking at the sample report, right? So what are some other things in that report that I should look at, right? Because I think a lot of potential pen test clients may not even know what a good report versus a bad report looks like.
I think some key things is a good pen test report will be readable by anyone. If not the entire report, then an executive summary. So a pen test that's readable and understandable by anybody, whether or not they be technical or non-technical. I think that's how reports are meant to be framed, because they're meant to be seen by both technical and non-technical people of an organization. Right. So I think that's a huge thing. Another big thing is references. If there's no references to findings and credible bodies that those findings link back to, you know, I think that's another key giveaway.
Yeah. Our COO, Jim, always says, you know, you should have references if you are not the authority. And generally speaking, we should not be the authority unless it's something that we completely discovered as a new vulnerability during that penetration test, which is atypical on externals. It's pretty common internally, but yeah, you know, they should be point. And by the way, Wikipedia is not a reference. We just want to point that out. That shouldn't be in your pen test report. And so, you know, generally speaking, yeah, man, you should be pointing at reputable folks. You know, we should be making MITRE references, right? If you don't know what MITRE is, check it out. It's an attack framework that traces back specific attacks to specific defenses, remediations, and allows for repeatable testing. And so, yeah, I would also say risk ratings, right? Like how mm-hmm. you do a risk rating should not be arbitrary. It should not be subjective. It's something that should be, I should be able to give a client the description of a vulnerability and have them plug it into the same thing that I'm doing. And we should get the same result when it comes to risk rating. Right. Right? And so there are a couple of them. I think Dread is one, CVSS. I think there's a third one that's a lot less used, but you know, make sure that those findings include both those resources, those risk ratings. What about evidence? Like how do you normally see that play out in the reports?
Yeah, evidence is a big thing. Good documentation can be seen from evidence. If somebody just pops a screenshot underneath a finding, here's the evidence, and it makes no sense to you, you know, that's kind of a key giveaway. That's not really a good sample report. You should be able to look at the evidence and tell what the issue is, whether it be highlighted in the evidence and arrows pointing to, like we do. Yeah. We want to highlight and call out specifically, here's where the issue lies, and then it needs to be explained. So evidence is another huge thing.
Yeah. And you already talked about remediation steps, but, you know, make sure that those remediation steps in that sample report that you look at is comprehensive. You should not need to go get a PhD in Citrix to be able to remediate a finding that we have on that platform. And so hopefully there's references to either the patches, if it's, something like that, or a configuration change, whatever it is. So definitely. So a couple of other things too. So we offer retesting at no cost. Not every firm does that. If that is something that is of interest to you guys, make sure the firm does the retesting, right? In other words, we give you the report. If you fix the issue, we can retest it and validate that it's fixed. And then we can modify the report to reflect that. So if that's something you want, make sure that you ask that question, because it's not uniform across the industry that everybody does that.
Right. I think another huge thing that's going to be a giveaway is communication and cadence of communication.
Yeah.
Something that you can tell, you know, prior to signing and things of that nature is how often you're getting emails and how responsive the team that you're working with is. I think it's very important to have a team that is robust in their communications because you don't want to be in the dark on your engagement. That's the last thing that a firm that's doing your penetration test should want for you. You don't ever want to be confused when you look at a report. And you also don't ever want to see something critical in a report that hasn't been brought to your attention prior to the report. So I think communication and cadence of communication is a huge thing that will give away a good pen test firm versus, you know, somebody that's not doing a great job.
Completely agree, man. Completely agree. So let's talk about what the client can do to make sure the pen test is successful, right? So we I know we already talked about like prereqs with regards to internal processes, procedures, things to have in place, but what about specific tasks? You know, one thing that comes to mind for me, like right off the top is, you know, involving the rest of your team, right? And so whether, you know, we go back and forth to clients on whether they want their MSSP to be involved. And that probably depends on goals, right? So what are your thoughts on including the MSSP on like, hey, we're having a pen test or leaving them in the dark?
Leave them in the dark. I'd say nine out of 10 times, unless you have a 1 out of 10 where you like need to communicate it with them, leave them in the dark until you start getting alerts from them and then communicate with them that you have a pen test ongoing. Because part of the benefit of a penetration test is getting to test your MSSP. Are they doing a good job? Are they catching things you're expecting them to catch? How fast are they catching these things? That's all things that are going to be super important because you are paying these people a lot of money and you don't want that money to be wasted. So why not give them a test as well?
No, I completely agree with that. And you know, that 1 out of 10 that you mentioned is when someone is doing MSP and MSSP. So they're not only your IT provider, but they're also your security provider, which is in general is kind of considered to be bad practice, right? Because your security team should be, you know, independent from your IT team. But in the case that it's a small or medium-sized company and their team is doing both, there's no avoiding it, right? We kind of have to involve them because we don't want them setting the world on fire. Also, you know, on that note, make sure you understand your MSSP's SOPs, like their standard operating procedures with regards to quarantining devices. We have had situations where we're in the middle of a pen test, and let's say, you know, we compromise a domain controller in an internal pen test, and the MSSP's policy is to shut down and isolate the system that is in question.
Bye-bye domain controller.
Right, right. Now we're talking about a catastrophic event. So, you know, so make sure that you have a good understanding of how your MSSP will react and then, you know, handle appropriately. I would also say internal communication, right? Make sure you let your IT staff know if they're internal employees. Make sure you let any interested parties know. What we don't want to do is create a situation where somebody inside your network spins up an incident response type reaction in reaction to a pen test. It's rare that it happens, but it does happen. So what other kind of information / you know, I need to have my scope, right? Like kind of pre-prepared. You mentioned that already. You need to know what you have, you know, and kind of understand what your expectations are, what you need to receive from that penetration test if it's beyond the standard deliverables.
Yeah, I think a kickoff call is going to be where you set expectation and goals of success, because the penetration firm that's doing your engagement should ask the question of, what are your goals for this engagement? What are you looking to get out of it? And that's going to set the way that they do the test, because they're going to do the things that are most pressing and important to you. Specifically, I can think of internal engagements. You know, there's about 100 different attacks and avenues that somebody can take. But if you have a list of 5 things that you want to test controls of, that's going to be where the penetration tester is going to focus. Since it is a time-limited engagement, we don't have time to do every possible thing that we want to do. So setting goals for the test and what you want to see out of it is, you know, the most important thing to, you know, seeing success from that engagement.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Yeah, man. So, I mean, I think that kind of wraps things. Do you have anything you want to add before we call it? You know, I mean, the biggest thing is understand what you're getting, understand who you're getting into business with, and just, you know, have expectations be on the table so everybody knows what they are. Very good. Well, folks, that's all we have time for today. And, you know, if you like what we're doing, like I said, just like, subscribe, share, and let everybody know, you know, what we got going on over here. We really appreciate you guys. And we'll see you next Wednesday.